Hey everyone, I'm Ben Parker here to tell you that the Stat Sheet Podcast is presented by Box Score Network. Box Score Network is your one-stop shop for all things NFL podcasts. You want game analysis, betting lines, hot takes, or fantasy advice? Well, check out Box Score Network and follow Box Score Network on Twitter at BScore Network for updates. Welcome back in, everybody, to the Stat Sheet Podcast. Privileged to have you on board again. As always, we have Simon in Studio Alpha. We have Ronan back from his birthday sabbatical in Studio, what is that, Beta, I guess. And I tonight am in Studio Delta, so we are all excited to be here. We are loaded. We have more teams losing who shouldn't be, more good teams getting blown out, more backup quarterbacks winning, tons of injuries, especially in the AFC North. We've got a lot to cover. Let's jump right on it. Simon, Monday Night Football, it was another pretty good one. Eagles and Seahawks, give us your first thoughts.
What a difference 24 hours makes, because last night, which was Sunday night at about this time, we were getting all the news about Jalen Hurts and his illness, and we weren't sure if he was going to play. So it was looking like it could potentially be a Drew Lock versus Marcus Mariota showdown on Monday Night Football. I didn't text you guys this time around because I didn't want to jinx again, but I was like, can we start recording the podcast at halftime? Is that going to be a possibility? Even though, hey, these two teams are still very much in the thick of seeding and trying to win a division, trying to win a wild card spot, so the game would have mattered regardless. But how much were we going to learn from Drew Lock versus Marcus Mariota? And, you know, fate has it, Jalen Hurts plays, goes 17 of 31, 143 yards, throws his two picks, rushes for 13 yards, or rushes 13 times for 82 yards and two touchdowns. And this was a fun game, Ben. You know, we still have questions about this Eagles team. I think there are still questions about the Seahawks team that you can kind of write off with all of the injuries that they've sustained on the offensive end. Geno, obviously, the defense is still finding its way. They were able to come up with some big plays in this one, at least. But overall, fun game on Monday night, Ben.
Ronan, welcome back. Hit us up, man.
Thank you, Ben. What a kind of odd game. It seemed like the Eagles were in the driver's seat for, you know, the most of the game. I mean, you know, it was a boxing match. The Seahawks were definitely throwing some punches back, but there at the end, man, Drew Lock coming away with it to JSN. Not an ideal night for Matt Patricia, right? Of the the Eagles.
Call him whatever you want. It is Matt Patricia.
Ooh, Matt Patricia. Oh, thank God. Whew, scared me there, Simon. You can't be doing that to me. Cannot be doing that to me. But we Matt Patricia, up, obviously. It's understated. It's warranted. I wasn't here last week. But Matt Patricia was, I guess, the defensive coordinator tonight. Kind of got that role this morning / yesterday. I'm not entirely sure. And he got carved up by the backup quarterback in Seattle. Drew Lock, 22 of 33, 208 yards, a touchdown. But, guys, Seattle has something special on that offense. And, yes, they have great receivers. But their running back, Kenneth Walker, K9. 19 carries, 86 yards, touchdown. And then he also had three receptions for 26 yards. He's a difference maker, guys. Kenneth Walker, you see, whenever this Seattle team under Pete Carroll is rolling, it's whenever they have a very solid run game. And with K9, he delivers that and then some, because he's explosive. He makes the right cut. He makes the right read. He's just all around. He's kind of one of those all around backs, and I think he can be one of those top running backs for the foreseeable future, Simon.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, maybe there is something to Seattle then spending that day two pick on Zach Charbonnet, because what we've seen this year from Walker and even a little last year is the way he plays with the burst and speed, but also the physicality and combined with his size, maybe just doesn't lend itself to 17 healthy games. And you know, Seattle clearly needs him to be healthy as much as possible. We saw what their offense was like when he was out for, you know, two full games and parts of other games here over the last month or so. But he accounted for 55 yards on their touchdown drive to start the third quarter. The Seattle recommitting itself to the run game and into using Kenneth Walker at the start of the second half was really what made the difference. He had 7 carries for just 19 yards in the first half. And you kind of thought, you know, where it's 10-3 going into the half, you're like, man, you've got a backup quarterback going against this Eagles pass rush. Even though they're also missing guys on the defensive side, we'll talk about Darius Slay here in a minute, but you know, you're like, what's going to be the shakeup, right? What's going to change things? And it was getting the ball to Kenneth Walker, not being worried about game script, not being worried about possessions or anything like that. Hey, coming out of the half, let's just go get the points we need, tie this thing up, and then they're able to be in it blow for blow the rest of the way, Ben.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of weird seeing the Eagles on a 3-game losing streak here, right? I mean, we're not used to that from this version of the Eagles team. And yet here they sit after 2 vicious games against the Cowboys and the 49ers, and now a road game in which Hurts is sick. And, you know, he wasn't bad, but he wasn't himself either. You could tell it just wasn't quite the Hurts guy we all know and love. So, but Seattle, I love the resiliency here because it kind of felt like even though – The way I felt as I was watching, it felt like the Eagles were kind of in control, even though they were a little bit banged up, a little not quite what we're used to seeing. But they were going to kind of pull this one on out and, you know, head on down the road, but not so fast. Here's Seattle. They're obviously not playing good. 4-game losing streak. And, man, how many teams would fold under that? Even at home, how many teams would just kind of fold? But, no, there it is. It's a 10-play, 92-yard drive there at the end of the game. And then you hang on to it, even with the Eagles being as dangerous as they are in the game situations. So I'm really impressed here by the Seahawks stepping up here and catching a win, Ronan.
Absolutely. And you know, looking down the line, they're still fighting for that NFC wildcard spot. A lot of the teams in the NFC, it seems like are 500 or hovering around there. So, I mean, moving forward, you know, even with Drew Lock, they're able to win over the Eagles. So, I mean, the sky's the limit, really, for the Seahawks team. Now, of course, you know, it's not like they're putting up generational numbers or, you know, historic numbers. But, I mean, whenever you look at their offense and, you know, how efficient they are at times, and then their defense, how they continue to kind of develop over time. Leonard Williams had himself a really good game, who they picked up before the trade deadline. So, I don't know, this Seahawks team, nobody's going to want to match up against them come playoff time. I mean, we just saw it here, right? Yes, the Eagles were banged up, but, I mean, Seahawks also didn't have their starting quarterback. So let's start taking that into account as well, you know, because I think a lot of people in the media are going to kind of discredit, you know, the Eagles are, you know, banged up and they didn't have this and that and Jalen was playing sick. Absolutely, you know, absolutely. But at the same time, the Seahawks were dealing with stuff too. They were on a 4-game losing streak. They were dealing with a backup quarterback. So, you know, moving forward, the Seahawks team is going to be real dangerous, Ben.
Yeah, we'll come back to the game in a second, but just to stay on that wild card track, I was impressed because me and Simon talked about it on our podcast, on his podcast earlier in the week. I was impressed that Tampa Bay caught a win, that the Rams caught a win, that the Saints caught a win, and now Seattle catches a win. I was impressed that these teams have at least stepped up for 1 week, and that's 4 teams. You would figure, hey, at least 2 of them next week step up, and I'd rather see that. I don't want to see these teams backing into the playoff wild card spot at 8-9 with having lost 2 out of 3 games, and they just got lucky with tiebreakers. I want to see these teams earn it. So that's 4 teams that, for better or for worse, no matter what else they've done this year, actually stepped up a little bit, showed that they actually wanted this thing. Actually want to get into the playoffs, so I liked that as well. Simon, it bothered me, though, to see the Eagles lose a 3rd game, and I'll tell you why it bothered me. I told you last week that I still favored the Eagles to win the division, which looked pretty good when Dallas got smoked by the Bills. But here's the Eagles losing 3 straight in a row, man, and you're like, well, they're just going to kind of keep mucking around with the Cowboys here.
Yeah, what I'm not liking what I'm seeing from the Eagles. We talked about it. I mean, we've been saying it for a couple weeks now, but you and I said it last week, where these big losses that they've had to get away from what's been successful for them on the offensive end. Never mind the defensive end, because they've been having problems there all season. That you've been particularly been highlighting, but offensively, they keep getting in these negative game scripts or getting down early. They have to go away from the run game. And this one, that's not the case. They're in a positive game script all game long, all the way until the fourth quarter. They have 178 rushing yards on the game in this one. And what I didn't love was their play calling in their fourth quarter. Now, this is something that Eagles fans have been shouting from the rooftops all year long about Ben Johnson, I believe is the OC's name this year. So you have a 17-13 game after the Seahawks get their field goal on the hilarious Pete Carroll fumbling the timeout and challenge and clock management and all that stuff in that drive. Not that it really mattered. They got a field goal, which is probably what they would have gotten anyways. But after the Seahawks get their field goal, the Eagles run four plays, three passes, one. Just one-on-one, needless, really deep shot in the middle of the field to Quez Watkins. That becomes an interception. You get the ball back. You run the ball six straight times, albeit not the most successful runs. You get one first down, and you end up on a 3rd-and-7. And you throw the ball before the two-minute warning. Now, I went back and forth in my head. I'm trying to not be like such a stickler for this sort of stuff, but best-case scenario, right, you have the most unstoppable 1 or 2 yard play in the NFL, which maybe is what they're thinking anyways, right? Because they're kind of just going out to the flat on Dallas Goedert on that play. He may or may not have been able to reach for the first down and he caught the ball. But let's say you run the ball. You've been running well all game. I know not particularly on that series, but you've been running the ball well all game. Get 4 or 5 yards. Take it to the 2 minute warning on that play. Then you get 4th down, 4th and 1, 4th and 2. You run your push play and you get a first down. And that's the game right there. You know that right. Troy and Buck were saying it on the broadcast, like this play, this is the game right here. If they can get this last first down, instead they throw the ball on 3rd-and-7. It's incomplete. The clock stops. They punt the ball away on one side of the 2 minute warning. Seahawks basically get it with what, 1:52 left. And I think Seattle had one last timeout. I don't even think they ended up using it on that last drive, but you know, because worst case, let's say you run the ball and you don't get it. You either take it all the way down to the 2 minute warning or you force Seattle to use their last timeout, right? For an offense that's been so herky jerky for the last month or so, and to finally be able to rely on your strength, which is the run game, to go away from it there at different points in those last two series was really baffling to me. It really just felt like something that they didn't need to do. And maybe that's a little bit of the, like, we're feeling the pressure, let's get the kill shot, at least on that Quez Watkins interception, because you could say like, hey, they ran the ball six times and they were in 3rd and long, you know, what a pass play, they should be able to accomplish that. And yeah, I get that. But like, just why, man? Like, why make it harder on yourself? I didn't love that. So it feels like an offense that's a little stuck in the mud with a defense that is a little shaky up the middle still. Darius Slay gets his knee scoped this week. And I know they said, oh, he'll just be out a week. Nah, man, you're in week 15 and you go under the knife or something. Like, that's for, what is he, 32, 33? Like, that's a bad sign. Whether he does come back in a week or not, man, that's your cornerback one for a defensive back group that's been kind of tough this season. I'm nervous about that if I'm Philly.
Yeah, I agree. And listen, there are lots of specific things to point out with the Eagles, and you mentioned some of them. We've done it all year. But again, I'll go back to something I mentioned last week, and that is how quickly it can go from one year where it seems like everything you touch turns to gold, and the next year it's just like, well, it feels a little bit off, and we're not even sure why. I mean, you can point at the two coordinators being gone, but still, I mean, the organization is all still there. The head coach is there. The quarterback is there. Many of the same defensive players are there, and you're like, well, something's still just a little bit off. And, you know, it can just go that way from one year to the next, with sometimes without a reason, even though there are specific things we can point to with the Eagles here. So, Ronan, how do you feel here with the Eagles moving forward? Still, they got 3 games left. They're still tied with the Cowboys. And I think if they had another division win, which they'll play on an extra division game down the stretch, they would actually have the lead over the Cowboys, I think is what's in my head anyway. So how do you feel about the Eagles moving forward?
Ben, you know, this was a game after getting beat by Dallas, by San Fran, by pretty decent margins. This was a game that if you're Philly, you really would have liked to have had, because moving forward, you've got the Giants twice and the Cardinals, who are all, they're both eliminated. I don't know if it's mathematically true, but I believe it's safe to say the Giants might not be just eliminated yet, but they're not great tests. This was kind of the Eagles' last test going into the playoffs, and this wasn't what you wanted to see. I don't think you can look at the past three games and say, all right, well, you know, they're doomed come playoff time because, you know, whenever they match up against a formidable team, you know, they crumble, because we know that that's not necessarily true. It's matchup based. It's, you know, who has the momentum, who kicks off things. But, you know, earlier this season, the Eagles seemed a lot more untouchable than they do right now. That's probably a little bit more obvious than anything. But I don't know, Ben. I don't think they're that top team in the NFC anymore, at least in my eyes. I think that title belongs to San Francisco. And then I think Dallas and Philly are kind of fighting for that second spot. It's going to be really interesting to see how, you know, Philly deals with the controversy. You know, they pride themselves on being this tough team who, you know, can kind of overcome anything. They're going to have to overcome this. Jalen Hurts is going to have to fight through the adversity, right? People are going to talk. They just lost the Monday Night Football game. He threw two picks. No one's going to look at his rushing yards. No one cares. They just see, you know, the box score and the final score, and that's how they're going to base their opinion off of it. And, you know, he's not one to sit there and listen to media, but it can mess with you. It can mess with you, but if anyone's going to overcome it, I think it can be Hurts, Ben.
Simon, anything else on the game, man?
Since we talked a little bit about playoffs and wild card, I want to run through this with you guys. I want you just to pick a team, no explanation. It's only week 15. We're not previewing the playoffs or anything. I think we can all assume if Philly were to end up losing the division and they're the 5 seed, they're playing whoever comes out of the NFC South. We're assuming they win that game, right? We have no problems Correct. Picking them over any Yes. of the NFC South teams. We all feel that way. Okay. Let's say Philly gets the 2 seed. Let's say they win the division and they're the 2 or the 3 seed in the NFC. I'm going to run through a couple of teams going for wild card spots. I want to hear who you would pick in these matchups as of right now today. So let's say we have Philly versus Minnesota in the first round of the playoffs. Ben, who are Eagles. You taking?
Yeah, Ronan, I got who you the taking? Eagles.
Philly.
Don't feel good. Philly or the Rams? Ronan.
Philly.
Yeah, Ben. I still take the Eagles as well, although that's a closer matchup, I think, than the Vikings.
Let's give it a little rematch here. Seattle or Philly?
Yeah, I would take the Eagles. I assume Hurts won't be sick, and I would assume that matchup would probably take place in Philadelphia, right? Because yep. Seattle would be the 7 seed more than likely.
Yep, Ronan.
Yeah, fully loaded in Philly, I'd take the Eagles.
Yeah, so it's a tough I feel the same way out of all you guys. I think you both probably feel this way, that the Rams, I think, would be the toughest matchup because yep. just the best offense of the group. So that would be very interesting. But I think overall, we still feel like we know who Philadelphia is. This is a tough spell for sure. This is kind of like everything that was underlying for the season has just kind of bubbled up. And yeah, I mean, you know, to Ronan's point, like, they don't have another test at the end of the regular season. Maybe that's a good thing. You know, you're in school. It's midterms week, right? You flunk a bunch of midterms. You know what feels really good after that? Couple at-home quizzes, you know, right after a couple art projects to turn in, you know, some nice stuff. Like, it's just like, let's take it easy. Let's give our brain a bit of a break. Now, they can't look ahead, right? They can't mess around. They're not going to miss the playoffs, right? I mean, I'm pretty sure they're locked into a playoff spot at this point. They're gonna be fine. They're gonna be fine. Now, how do we feel about them in the grand scheme of things in terms of trying to really make a run at this thing again? That's a different story. But I think they're gonna have a chance to get back on track here pretty soon, Ben.
All right. So that's the Seahawks over the Eagles, a good Monday night game. We continue to get pretty good Monday nighters pretty consistently, while a lot of our Thursday nighters continue to be not good. A Thursday night game we were scheduled to cover and thought about not covering, and now we're going to cover because of what came out of it. The Chargers fire head coach Brandon Staley and general manager Tom Telesco after the Chargers lose on Thursday night, the 63-21 to the Raiders. Ronan, I'm going to give you first shots at it, whether you want to take shots at Staley and Telesco as they head out the door or you want to look forward.
I think I'll do a little bit of both, Ben. Thank you. Because it's warranted. It truly is. It truly is. Because I think you can go back probably roughly 12 months ago whenever I was like, hey, guys, are we sure about Brandon Staley? And we were all like, not really, no. And the Chargers,
I was pretty sure. I'll eat that, by the way. Thanks for that, Ronan. Yeah, I appreciate you. I was wrong.
I mean, you weren't sitting there like pounding the drum, like no, he's the truth. Like,
yeah, maybe not the truth, but I was pounding. Like, I was pounding pretty hard. I was pounding. Yeah.
And you know, respectably, because I mean, he was a good DC in LA for the Rams, and I mean, they made the playoffs last year, so it's not like it was all grim. But after that playoff choke to the Jaguars, it seemed like the Chargers just were not necessarily that team that we had hoped that they could become. And then obviously this year has just been a complete catastrophe. They just continue to make questionable moves. I bring up the Quentin Johnston pick as much as I can. You can go back in our recent episodes and hear about that. Well, let's go back in time a little bit, or actually, no, let's go in a fantasy world where, you know, we're maybe 10 months ago, and we're sitting there and we're like, hey, Sean Payton is available and the Chargers have a spot open, right? Because they just fired Brandon Staley after the choking of, the playoffs.
Right.
How do we think that this Chargers team would look with Sean Payton this year? Now, I'm not saying that it would be, you know, some elite offense, right? But you look at Denver and their improvement, and then you look at Los Angeles, the Chargers, and how I don't even know what word could describe that offense, because there's so much talent all over the field, offense and defense. And then you look at the record and you look at the play calling, and it's just very, very, very unfortunate. But Simon, I'll kick it to you. Just, you don't have to comment on, you know, how you think Sean Payton would be leading the Chargers, but I'd love to hear it.
Yeah, I mean, that is a great question, what this would look like with Sean Payton. What are they – it's hard because he's just never had a quarterback like Justin Herbert. I mean, when you think about his time with Drew Brees, and the thing that I think makes – a lot of people like Herbert is the super fast processing and the 1 to 2 to 3 and the make the exact play that the play dictates. That's very Drew Brees like. The difference is that Justin Herbert's also 6'5" with a cannon arm. So you would like to think that Sean Payton would, take that to another level. But in terms of this season, when it comes specifically on the offense, I honestly am to the point where I don't think it would have mattered, because you're still going to have Mike Williams hurt. You're still going to have Corey Linsley not be in playing this season because of what I think is a heart condition that they've been checking on for the majority of the season, and how that affects your two young guards, your second-year guards, and Zion Johnson, Jamari Sawyer, what Austin Eckler looks like behind the line, Mike Williams getting hurt when he gets hurt. Maybe you have a couple extra tight ends that you like to throw the ball to, and maybe that helps out Justin Herbert a little bit. I don't think it affects the Chargers too much in the short term. And then if you think about it, like, depending on what happens this offseason, maybe it hinders them a little bit going to a guy who's a little more old school in his thinking and the way he does things versus what they could potentially do this offseason, which, you know, we'll get into, whether it's, you know, the Ben Johnsons of the world, or you go get Mike McDonald and he lets Kellen Moore stay on as OC, and Kellen Moore can do different things potentially with the offense. Who knows what that would look like? Maybe you go get a Dan Quinn to fix the culture, and he, whether he works with Kellen Moore again or not, like it'll be interesting to see what direction they go. And then of course they could just go, you know, Bill Belichick and go completely backwards and old school with it and see what happens. It would be interesting, but in the short term run, I don't think it would make the offense look that much different. What do you think, Ben?
You know what? I'm just going to go ahead and skip ahead here. I'm going to throw it out here. I haven't heard anybody else necessarily talk about it a lot, but I'm going to go ahead and put my stake in here for Jim Harbaugh. Out of all the teams that he could go to, this would be my personal favorite for him to go to. And for several different reasons. The Chargers have always kind of struggled with this. I mean, we've seen it for 40 years now, really, that the Chargers have had good teams and never got over the hump, never made it. I mean, talented offenses, some talented players on defense, and yet 40 years now, multiple different quarterbacks, multiple different coaches, like they just haven't been able to get there. And Jim Harbaugh seems to be the kind of guy who could just do a collective kick in the butt on everybody and say, hey, we are going to win, and we're going to win my way, or all of you are leaving. So, you know, now how long would Harbaugh stay? I don't know. It might be 5 years. It might be 5 years of fun, and then he's out, you know. But the Chargers, who have been so stable really for so long, they haven't had all the craziness that some of the other franchises could have had. They could afford to have a coach who's not going to be there very long if he's changing what they're doing and how they're approaching everything and getting more focused on winning versus just, I don't know, whatever else they're doing out there in Charger land. It's not winning big. So I would love to see that for both the Chargers and for Jim Harbaugh. Would be my personal favorite. So anyway, it's been bad. It's been sick. We don't have to state the obvious here, but I will. That Thursday night game was just awful. I mean, even if you take the fumbles out of it, which are demoralizing, the Chargers looked bad heading into this game. They looked bad heading out of this game. I mean, it was just – it's just a sick feeling. So, I hate it for Staley, but I think over the long haul it will be a good thing for the Chargers. Ronan?
I completely agree. It's going to be fun to see what direction they go. Simon kind of laid it out. They can go the old school. They can go the new school. They can go somewhere in between. It's a good roster. Lots of money kind of spread around, so that might be tough to deal with. But Simon, the Chargers might have the most attractive job come this offseason.
Heck yeah, man. I mean, I know that's been much of the Twitter debate here this week, but you've got a top five talent quarterback locked into the position right now. You've got an all-pro left tackle. You've got your draft picks. Now, to be honest, that is kind of it, because you've got a defense that's very expensive and aging. You've got the rest of the offensive line with some questions between the development of some guys and the health of some others. You're moving on from Eckler this offseason, probably. Everett's a free agent. Mike Williams is coming off the injury. Keenan Allen's another year older. But the hardest thing you can do in sports is get that top five quarterback, and they've got it. And I know everyone's been talking about, yeah, their cap space is pretty bad, and it is. But cap space, I mean, we talk about this every offseason, it's so fungible. And I know you'd have to cut some good players or move on from some guys that are pretty good players here. But man, one good draft. I mean, look at what Seattle did last season. One good draft, and you can fix a bunch of stuff, right, if you do the right thing. Now, Tom Telesco, I don't know his exact title, but essentially the top football decision maker with the Chargers, been with the team since like early 2000s or something like that, I think. Maybe I'm wrong there, but a long time. He's also gone. So this team has to find a new GM, a new decision maker. How they do that with the coach will be really interesting to see, because they need to get some new, younger, fresh talent in here. And whether it's on the offensive side of the ball that they focus, or defense, will be really interesting to see. To kind of focus on Brandon Staley here, and maybe this will kind of just put a pin in it. this decision came down to what's been happening on the defensive side of the ball. And it really was the feather in the cap for him to give up 63 points to Aiden O'Connell and the Las Vegas Raiders, right? Here's where Staley's Chargers defenses have ranked since he's been the head coach. In 2021, they were 23rd in yards allowed, 29th in points allowed, 26th in defensive DVOA. 2022, 20th in yards, 21st in points, 21st in DVOA. This year so far, 29th in yards, 27th in points, 28th in defensive DVOA. This has essentially been a bottom 3 to 5 defense since Staley has gotten here with the Chargers. And that's just miserable considering that he is a good defensive game planner, that he is a defensive-minded head coach, that they've been a very expensive defense, a team that has invested a lot, both from a financial standpoint and a draft standpoint, in this defense. You talk about giving Bosa his big extension, and he's been hurt and underperforming since then. They spend big on J.C. Jackson, who is now back in New England and not playing because he's struggling with the fact that he's not playing well, I think. I shouldn't say that. I think mental health issues was what was cited by some reporting, but we'll see what that kind of comes out to. But you also spend big on Sebastian Joseph Day to try to fix that run defense. That hasn't helped. You trade a second-round pick for Khalil Mack, who's had decent sack numbers since he's been there, but just not an impactful defender anymore. A lot was invested to make this defense the way that he wanted it, and they've been a bottom unit ever since then. You know, we're going to talk about a team here in a little bit that's had a much quicker turnaround on the defensive side of the ball by a defensive-minded head coach, and it might save him his job. Well, more on that later, but Brandon Staley and this whole thing with the Chargers comes down to the defense just never got itself together, and now that Justin Herbert's going to be making the money that he's going to be making, you have to find new ways to try to win, and it wasn't going to happen under Staley. So wherever he is next year, whether he's in the NFL as a DC or you know, starts back as a linebackers coach or goes to college and does something that might be good for him, I don't know, but it'll be, you know, wish all the best to him. And yeah, it's going to be real fun to see what the Chargers do here moving forward, guys.
Yeah, and it goes to remind us all what we all know is until a guy actually steps into the head coaching spot, you don't know if it's going to transfer over, because, and that's Ben Johnson, Eric Bieniemy, Mike McDonald. Yeah, I think it's Mike, right, from the Ravens. Yeah. We never know if they're going to be able to carry their talent from one side of the football to oversee the entire thing. In this case, the answer so far was no. We'll see if he ever gets another chance at that. But certainly best wishes to Staley on his future. So let's switch gears and go to some injuries now. I mentioned earlier, most of them are in the AFC North. And then we've got some AFC South injuries to cover as well. So, Ronan, I think I'm going to let you hit the first group here. Actually, you know what? I'm sorry. That's Simon's division. So, Simon, I'll let you hit the first group here. The Bengals, Ravens, Steelers. Go ahead and knock us through.
Yeah, so the Bengals sustained a couple injuries in their Saturday afternoon game. Wide receiver Jamar Chase, AC joint sprain, is going to be week to week. It's seeming like trending towards unlikely to play next week against the Pittsburgh Steelers, but we will continue to check on that. So that's obviously, you know, Jake Browning needs every weapon he can get for that offense, but it was another good week for them. And on the defensive side of the ball, DJ Reader, torn quad, nasty stuff. Season-ending injury for him. The Bengals defense has been up and down all season with injuries and just transitions, but DJ Reader was a very important part to that defense, and he's going to be out the rest of the season. So the Bengals, for a team that are trying to rally around this backup quarterback, we counted them out. I definitely counted them out after Joe Burrow was officially done for the season. Sustaining more injuries when they're trying to make this wild card hunt, but they've helped themselves, you know, the last couple of weeks, gaining a little bit of advantage here. So we'll see how they do down the stretch. For the Ravens, running back Keaton Mitchell, one of the gems of the season that has kind of just come alive, torn ACL this weekend. He's done for the season. That's tough to see. This Ravens offense, which continues to show itself to be more and more multiple every single week. They lost Mark Andrews as a weapon a few weeks ago. Odell Beckham Jr. has kind of been up and down as well. This team was really liking the pop it was getting from Keaton Mitchell. We'll see if they kind of make any corresponding moves, but Gus Edwards is definitely, he never really fully lost his spot to Mitchell, but he'll get some snaps back and see if he can continue to be productive for them as they continue to make their push as the number one team in the AFC. Steelers, Minka Fitzpatrick, who is playing with a broken hand, by the way, we talked about him sustaining that injury a couple weeks ago. He hurt his knee early in that Colts game. He's week to week. I think he was already officially listed as out for next week with that knee injury. He's also dealt with a soft tissue injury, I think hamstring earlier in the year. So he's been going through it for a Steelers defense that has been beaten up quite a bit this season, but also just as the season has gone along, pretty disappointing. The Steelers will also be without safety DeMonte Casey for probably the rest of the season. He got suspended by the league for his hit on Michael Pittman Jr., which he is probably going to appeal, but with only, what, 3 games left in the regular season, it's probably not getting lowered any more to that. So the Steelers are going to be thin at safety moving forward. And then the Browns, defensive back Grant Delpit, who Ben and I were just talking about getting his contract extension last week at this time. He is going to IR with a groin injury. He could come back this season if in the playoffs. And then defensive end Obo Okonkwo has a pec injury. He's week to week. It seems like some of the reporting is he could be done for the season as well. Pec injuries are tough, but who knows, depending on a deep playoff run, it seems like he could maybe be back. So the AFC North, all these teams are still in the thick of it. Steelers falling away a little bit, Ravens running away with it with a little bit, but all these guys sustaining some injuries. I'd say the Browns are probably in the best case in terms of sustaining some of those injuries. They just have a really deep defense, really well coached. Ravens will continue to kind of find weapons, but they would have liked to have had Keaton Mitchell for a playoff run. But Bengals, Ja'Marr Chase should be short term. Steelers safety Minka Fitzpatrick, we'll see. But like I said, they're falling out of this thing a little bit. So yeah, that's AFC North rundown. Continues to be a large staple of this injury segment week after week. Ben.
Yeah, and listen, if you're a Ravens running back, your lifespan in terms of career is really short. Good gosh, they just cannot keep a guy healthy in terms of being able to stay on the field these past couple of seasons. So we'll see if they can keep on recovering from that. But when I was hearing you talk about the Bengals and their injuries and really the AFC North, I was like, man, you know, the Bengals may very well get in the playoffs. They're 8-6 with the sixth spot right now, but how good can they be when they get there? But then I thought, well, man, you can say it's the same thing about the Browns, the Colts, the Texans, the Bills, the Steelers, the Broncos. I mean, they're all beat to pieces. And really, it's an analogy. It's almost like a big old ship that has been in a battle out on the ocean, and they do get into port, but, I mean, it's all just beat to crap. And you know, it's almost a worthless ship at that point. So if you're healthy at all in any way, if you're Miami healthy, KC healthy, if you're Baltimore reasonably healthy, running backs notwithstanding, I mean, you really have a leg up. And as exciting as it is to watch these kind of last few weeks of the season with all these teams fighting for playoff spots, I don't know that the first couple of rounds here in the AFC are going to be overly exciting, because we've got all kind of backup quarterbacks and teams that are kind of working with one arm and one leg. I mean, it's almost like I'm waiting for the AFC title game to really get the teams that I think have a chance to do anything. And usually it's a little bit deeper than that. So I, you know, Rona, that's where I'm at. Anything else on this group of injuries here?
Just nothing other than the AFC North needs to like figure out how to like protect their players, because it's an ongoing segment. Like, we have to divvy up between the AFC North and then the rest of the league.
Yeah, and Simon, even I don't remember his name. Simon can tell me. Simon had a guest on back during the offseason that even talked about how the Ravens had brought in basically a whole new kind of a group to try to fix that problem. And again, you can't do that in 10 months. That's not reasonable. But still, we see it continuing for all of these teams. And, you know, is it the physical play? Is it the weather? Is it just something, the way these organizations conduct themselves in that division? I don't know. But in any case, it just continues to hammer and really has for a while. So, Rona, give us the other group of injuries we got tonight.
Yeah, so like Simon mentioned, Colts wide receiver Michael Pittman is in concussion protocol after the hit by KZ. It's kind of just to be determined. With it's always kind of up to the player. Every player deals with the concussion differently. With that being said, Jags quarterback Trevor Lawrence, who's been continuously banged up throughout the season, seems like he suffered a concussion in the last drive of last week's game against the Ravens. He might be playing. Again, it's one of those things that it's just kind of up to the player. Titans quarterback Will Levis suffered a high ankle sprain. It seems like it's roughly the same caliber as Ryan Tannehill's. So that might be something that might sway the Titans to bench him for the rest of the year just to keep him safe and healthy. And then finally, Chiefs running back Isaiah Pacheco suffered a shoulder injury. I think I saw something earlier today where Coach Andy Reid said that he expects Pacheco to play come next week, Ben.
Yeah, another kind of survival of the fittest group here in the AFC South and the Chiefs along with it. So quite a list of injuries there. The Lawrence concussion thing I think was a little weird. We were talking about it in the pre-broadcast, a little bit odd there. But Jacksonville's a team that, boy, they seem like they're just on the edge and they can't quite get there even during this season. We've seen them. They're incredibly dangerous. Good gosh, are they dangerous. They'll be dangerous for any playoff game. And yet, you almost wonder, well, is anybody actually scared of Jacksonville? Because I'm not sure that if you're Baltimore or Miami or KC that you are. So anyway, we'll keep an eye on Trevor Lawrence there. And then the Titans, boy, they just can't catch a break this season. I think we all already knew it might be a little bit of a struggle this year for Tennessee. And yet they just keep on not catching breaks either. Simon, I know you're closer to Tennessee than you are some of these other teams here, but it just seems like the Titans can't catch a break.
Yeah, it's a tough go for Tennessee. I do think, especially lately, and really because they've moved to Levis, and I think Levis has been better than we all thought he was going to be going into the season. They've looked a little bit better. My question for you guys on Tennessee, they have what, 3 games left in the season? Maybe you don't want to risk anything else happening to Levis at this point. You've seen enough good stuff. You have 2 options. You can let Tannehill play for 3 weeks. Is he a free agent? Do we know?
I don't think so. I'd have to look, but I don't think so.
I'm going to pull it up because I was going to pose this question. Oh, yeah. No, his contract voids. He is a free agent. Okay.
He is a free agent.
Never mind. Wow. I was going to say, do you let him play and try and create some trade value for the offseason here? Or, so now the question, the framing of it, instead of that, if you're not going to be able to trade him, is unless you work out a hole, rip up the voids because he wants to go somewhere specific and you can work out a trade. But let's say that's not going to happen. He's going to be a free agent. Do you go down swinging with Tannehill, give him a little swan song for the Titans and Vrabel can preach, hey, we're in this thing till the end? Or do you guys want to see 3 weeks of Malik Willis and see what happens / get a higher draft pick? Ronan, I'll go to you first.
Personally, I think I would start Malik Willis that first week of the 3. And if he plays well, I'd probably ride it through just to try and increase his trade value, if we're being honest. Mm. Young quarterback, obviously has wheels, has arm talent, just hasn't necessarily been able to correlate it with NFL arm talent. That's probably the route I'd go. Now, if he just looks pretty much like he has been, or he has in prior appearances, then yeah, give Tannehill his swan song. And honestly, he deserves it. He's been I don't want to say like legend or anything, but he's been a very important piece of, kind of that era of Titans football. So I think the fans of all people, and obviously Tannehill as well, and probably some of his buddies on the team, would appreciate some sort of swan song. Ben, what do you think?
Yeah, I'd go with Malik Willis. I'd love to see what Willis can do in 3 games. And, if it's nothing, then oh well. I mean, no big deal. Nothing lost here. But I'd give him a shot too. For one reason, just what you said, create some trade value. If nothing else, you give him 3 games, you keep him next year. and he's got a little bit of more of experience under his belt. So I like doing that. And then too, with the Malik Willis thing, you know, when Tannehill went down, they were going to go back and forth between Willis and Levis for that game. Willis gets in the game, and there's a high snap that goes through his hands. Like, it's a really bad snap from the center, goes through his hands, and they call it a fumble, but really it was the center's fault. And that was the game that Levis comes in and basically throws the three or four touchdowns, and so Willis doesn't even get another chance. Not that game, not the next week. I mean, that's it. So just cleanup duty, basically. So, or fix, you know, covering for Levis when he's out. So I'd love to see Willis just get three games, see what he can do. You've really had nothing to lose at this point. I don't, other than honoring Tannehill, which they didn't seem interested in doing since they've got him as what, the placeholder, basically. Dude, believe it. So they're holding kicks. Other than that, what have you got to lose by putting Willis in, and what have you got to gain by putting Tannehill in? So that's what I would do, Simon.
Yeah, it was a much more interesting question when I thought Tannehill might be able to be traded. But no, you guys are right. Malik Willis is the right way to go. And for Chiefs running back Isaiah Pacheco, talk about guys that are going into the playoff hunt with surgeries. I mean, he got a cleanup procedure done on that shoulder. You know, he injured it in the Packers game, was out last week, and then this week had a procedure done. Just like, I don't love that, man. I really don't love surgeries at this time of year, even if you say it's going to be back. So, yeah, that'll be interesting, Ben.
Yeah, and it's double hurtful for Kansas City. I mean, it's kind of easy to ignore because Kansas City isn't exactly smoking anyway right now. But it's double hurtful for Kansas City in light of the fact that they really can't seem to get a throwing offense going. I mean, they've got the best quarterback in the NFL, and they just can't seem to score points and get too many passing yards going here. So if you don't have the running game there with Pacheco, then it's a double whammy there on Kansas City. But, you know, join the club. I listed all the other AFC teams off who have just as bad or worse to deal with. So, you know, KC will have to figure it out. So, all right, in a few minutes after these commercials, we're going to talk about the Ravens beating the Jaguars, the Browns beating the Bears. I'm going to throw a penalty flag at one team and then take it away and throw it at the other team in our barbecue segment tonight. All that's coming up after this break.
Hey, I'm Connor.
I'm Billy.
And I'm Austin.
And we're the host of the Tricky Takes podcast presented by the Box Score Network.
We talk about all things sports ranging from golf, baseball, football, NBA, and all college sports.
Come give us a listen and make sure you follow us over on Twitter at Tricky Takes, and that's Tricky with two I's.
Hey everyone, I'm Ben Parker.
And I'm Robert Zinvier, and we are the Odds On Favorite, presented by Box Score Network.
Every week, we analyze NFL point spreads, over-unders, props, futures, and much more.
Follow us on Twitter at Odds On Favorite and listen on Apple, Spotify, or anywhere you get your podcasts.
What's up, everyone? I'm here to tell you about the Simon Short Podcast. Every Thursday, I deep dive topics related to the NFL, pro hoops, pop culture, and more. Be sure to subscribe to the Simon Short Podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. We encourage you, please, to go check out all the other podcasts that are connected to this network. We try to put out a lot of content every week from a lot of different angles. So it comes out, I think, almost, I think, three or four different days a week. So you've got a new podcast on almost every weekday, and we encourage you to check all of that out. Sunday Night Football, the Ravens beat the Jaguars 23-7. Simon, first take.
Just another stifling defensive effort by the Baltimore Ravens. Just do everything they want to every single week. It seems like as of right now, we haven't found a team that has found a consistent answer that's been replicable going against them. I mean, they're just too fast, too smart, too sound. They made this another poor running Jaguars performance. They made this a poor Trevor Lawrence performance. They just dominate every matchup. And if it wasn't for, what was it? I don't even remember how long the Agnew touchdown was, but one explosive play touchdown for the Jaguars was all they could muster. The Ravens defense, man, is just incredible, Ben.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't know where else you start at. I mean, Lawrence has the fumble problem still, and then apparently the concussion thing that popped up at some point. Nobody's too sure exactly when that happened, but all of that notwithstanding, the Ravens look like they're ready to make a Super Bowl run. I mean, they're not a perfect team, but you mentioned it, they can beat you so many different ways, and they continue to win, and they've got the number one seed right now, and they're going to have home field, and at the moment, running back notwithstanding, they got a lot of healthy people to line up out there, especially Lamar. That's the important one. So I like what I'm seeing here out of Baltimore. And again, it wasn't necessarily the prettiest game, but still, they come in here on the road and they beat Jacksonville and they move on. I mean, just taking care of business. Ronan, first thoughts?
I completely agree, Ben. One thing that, you know, a couple of weeks ago we were kind of uncertain about was how the Ravens offense would look without Mark Andrews, right? And, you know, of course, here we are, primetime game, and Isaiah Likely steps up, 5 receptions, 70 yards, and a big touchdown. You guys are right. The playmakers just kind of step up in this offense. You know, maybe in terms of an overall cast, they're not the most loaded. But, gosh, they're one of the most dangerous, it seems like. And Lamar Jackson obviously has a huge part in that. He was 14-24 for 171 yards, a touchdown, and a pick. He rushed the ball 12 times for 97 yards as well. Gus Edwards rushed it 16 times, 58 yards for a touchdown. And then obviously Keaton Mitchell, who unfortunately tore his ACL, had 9 carries for 73 yards. So they just find people to step up in big games. You know, one game it might be OBJ, one game it might be Zay Flowers, one game it might be Likely, one game it might be Rashad Bateman. You know, so, and then, you know what, on top of all of that, they have Lamar Jackson's legs to, you know, add to the threat. But going back to the defensive side, guys, one thing that stood out to me, the Jaguars, they had 61 plays, 333 yards, averaged five and a half yards per play. So it's not like they were playing bad offensively, but the big thing that stuck out, they were 0 for 3 in the red zone, which is crucial. Obviously, you know, 333 yards isn't a bad game at all statistically, but they were only able to put up 7 points because whenever it matters most, that Ravens defense bows up and shuts offenses out. So this Ravens team is one of the most dangerous. I mean, obviously, that's not saying a whole lot. They're the top seed in the AFC, but, I mean, offensively, they can beat you a million different ways, and then defensively, they can just – I mean, choke you out. You're in the red zone, you're still not scoring. You know, you score once on 3 attempts in the red zone, and not even the score was in the red zone. So yeah, this Ravens team offensively, defensively, and then they've got Justin Tucker. Are you kidding me? Yes, I'm talking about the kicker. I love it, Ben.
Yeah, and listen, sloppy game for the Jaguars. They had 2 missed field goals. They had 2 drives that ended in fumbles. So the Jaguars hurt themselves. They could have, in an alternate universe, which it wasn't, they could have found a way to be a little bit trimmer with this game, kept the game closer, and then maybe found a way to win. But Baltimore's too good to be this sloppy against. The Ravens just are not going to – they're not going to choke up a game away this way themselves if you're making all the mistakes. So too sloppy for Jacksonville. And then just Ravens continue to chomp on through here. Simon, what else you got on this game?
Yeah, I mean, you talk about the sloppiness, and yeah, I mean, those field goals, those 2 missed field goals, both inside the 40 from Baltimore's 32 and Baltimore's 36. You flip those, it's a 10-point game. You have the fumble just outside of the red zone. So those that 0 for 3 red zone trips were the 2 missed field goals and the turnover on downs on their last possession. But you talk about that first Trevor Lawrence fumble that took place just outside the red zone. So even if you just want to give them 3 points there, if they can hold on to the ball, right, it's a touchdown game. And then let's see if where we can get that touchdown. Let's talk about the end of the half sequence, the end of the first half. You want to talk about just a team that is pressing in a lot of ways and doesn't seem to have all their ducks in a row. The Jaguars are driving down to close out the half. They had 1 minute to go, and they're moving the ball. And, you know, they 11-yard pass to Ridley. They get a defensive pass interference call for them. Then they get the big 36-yard pass down the left sideline to Zay Jones. It's first and goal at the Baltimore 5. with 11 seconds to go. I don't think they have any timeouts, but it was just such a clear go spike the ball, and you have two plays from the 5-yard line, right, with Trevor Lawrence. And they don't spike it. They run a play, and they run out of time. You know, they get a 1-yard pass to Parker Washington. That's the best play they can muster up, you know, in that one opportunity there. And it's just like, what are we doing here? What's not clicking for this team right now? I know they're still, I said this like 6 weeks ago, there's still the discourse of like, who's really in charge of this offense right now between, I think Press Taylor is the OC's name, and Doug Peterson, obviously the head coach. It just feels like week to week, you never know what offense you're going to get. And again, you're playing the Ravens defense, and it flusters teams, and you might just be thinking, they're so fast and so well organized. Like, let's just get down there and run a play as quick as we can. But you got to have a better play than that with some better options in that opportunity. And yeah, the Jags really lost the chance here to make some noise and kind of make their stamp here in the AFC, Ben.
They did. And Ronan, I'm going to come straight to you with it. Simon, I want to insert a thought if you don't mind looking it up. The Ravens are top five basically on offense and defense in terms of yards allowed, points allowed, points scored, and points given up. I am curious, though, where they line up on the DVOAs, both offense and defense, if you don't mind catching that. But Ronan, what Simon was alluding to there, Jacksonville's a team that I think we all like, and we know they're dangerous, and we know they're kind of sitting there on the edge. And I figure they're good for the playoffs, because, by the way, they got the Buccaneers, Panthers, and Titans to wind up the season here. So I figure they're good for the playoffs. But still, we watch so many of these top teams go through the gauntlet, play each other, play a lot of other good teams here the past few weeks. And the Jaguars just did theirs, and they lost all three. They lost to the Bengals, they lost to the Browns, and they lost to the Ravens. So it's not a good showing here for Jacksonville, even considering that Lawrence wasn't the most healthy.
No, it isn't. But, I mean, you know, Ben, we can go back to, you know, the top of the podcast, talking about the Eagles, right? They just dropped three in a row to three playoff teams. But, and, you know, the third was against a backup quarterback. So, I mean, is it time to hit the panic button in Jacksonville? No. But on the same side, I don't know how healthy Trevor is or has been. So my biggest question, truthfully, Ben, is how healthy is Trevor going to be come playoff time? What Trevor are we going to see? In terms of, you know, where the Jaguars as a whole stand, obviously dropping these games isn't ideal. But at the same time, it is the Ravens who are on fire, and they could have lost much worse games, I guess. Every team is going to kind of have their challenges, right? Everybody's going to have their ups and downs, I guess, unless you're the perfect Patriots or something. But I'm not too worried about this Jaguars team. But at the same time, I wasn't sitting there, and I don't think, truthfully, anybody is to an extent, you know, sitting there pounding the table that the Jaguars are going to go all the way to the Super Bowl, right? So you kind of got to look at it somewhere in the middle. It's not a perfect team, so they're going to struggle. But they do have a lot of talent, so they are expected to win, you know, 10-plus games, Ben.
Yeah, and I will say, Jaguars' body language has been great the whole season. Every time they step on the field, it almost reminds me a little bit of the Seahawks and I think the Ravens to a degree. It seems like those coaches get their guys just energetic and ready for every single game. I mean, you don't look at them and look like they're flustered or they don't know what to do. They look like they believe that they're going to win that game. And even if they played bad the whole freaking game, they still look like they believe. So I love the body language there. Simon, were you able to find the Ravens DVOAs?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. They are one of two teams that are top five in both offense and defense. Okay. They are fourth ranked in offense and second in defense. So very, very good, Ben. If you can be top, even top 10 in both, but especially top five in both, you are one of the elite teams in the NFL, and that's what they are this year.
Yeah, and that really bodes well, because when I look at the Ravens, I don't necessarily see a team that's dominant and just guaranteed Super Bowl stamp, but I see a team that we've already said it so many times, can beat you so many different ways. So you figure even if they're having an off day on defense, they can still win with the offense. Or if the offense is struggling, the defense is just going to wipe it out. So I really like what the Ravens have going here. And statistically, it's holding up. It looks like a team statistically and on the field that is primed to make a pretty good run here. So I'm eager to see it. I almost wish the playoffs started tomorrow so that the Ravens could be healthy and actually see what they can do when healthy. But not the case. They've still got a few more weeks to go. So, all right. One game that we did kind of opt in, flex in, if you will, instead of the Thursday night game is the Browns against the Bears. The Browns end up winning 20-17. All kinds of things we can talk about this game. Simon, where do you want to start?
We should start with the Browns. Like, this team, man, is just incredible defensively. I said the Ravens were second in DVOA. The Browns are first. I mean, and they're doing this with different injuries that have come along throughout the season. And just, they're just so, like, they take the air away from you, right? The Ravens do it with their speed and their smarts, knowing where to be. The Browns are just bullies, man. They're just mean. The defensive tackles, Dalvin Tomlinson, I think Shelby Harris, just made mincemeat of the Bears' interior offensive line, which I made fun of a couple of weeks ago, but they've gotten back healthier with Nate Davis returning, and they just, my gosh. I mean, when you have 340-pound, 330-pound dudes pulling swim moves on you and just, like, pushing you in the back down onto your face, like, my good, it's just not fair, man. It's not fair. So this Browns defense is just stifling. Joe Flacco, take it as a compliment or as an insult, looks exactly like he did in 2014, right, where he's just slinging that thing around, like, not moving in the pocket. It doesn't matter what's going on around him. It's so crazy to see. And just giving these guys a chance. And you know, this version of the Browns team is kind of the top level of the teams I've been talking about this season, where it's, we're just going to line up and do what we do on offense. We're going to make your life very miserable on defense, and we're just going to try to not make mistakes. Now, they made a handful of mistakes. I'll talk about the Bears defense later in this game, but you know, it's a Bucks at the low end of it. It's the Broncos and Steelers in the middle end of it. And it's this Browns team at the top end where it's just, we're going to try to run the ball. If we can't do that, Joe Flacco is going to, you know, target Amari Cooper on the sideline. He's going to look for Elijah Moore deep. He's going to look for Njoku on screens. And this defense is going to pound you in the face. And we're going to win way more games than we lose at this point, is what it looks like they're doing this year. So first takeaway is just, this Browns defense is just, it's real good, guys. If nobody knew yet to this point, just let me be the one to tell you, it's real good.
Yeah. Ronan, first thoughts on the Browns and Bears?
I guess I'll give the a little bit of the Bears perspective, because it's not all it's not as, you know, rainbow and roses and happiness as the Browns side of things. That was a tough watch. The Bears were in control for a lot of that game. They were looking pretty viable all around, really. It wasn't anything too crazy. It was a Luke Getsy called offense, so they weren't pushing the field down too crazy, or pushing the ball down the field too crazy. But whenever they did, Robert Tonyan unfortunately dropped it, which that was a huge gain that, you know, ended up being all for naught. And then obviously at the end of the game, Darnell Mooney dropping a huge pass. It's not a great cast around Justin Fields there, and Justin Fields is definitely not looking too hot this season. Fields 19 of 40, that's a below 50% completion percentage, 166 yards, a touchdown, and two picks. I don't want to stray away too much away from the game here, but it's looking more and more viable to go with a quarterback this offseason, maybe shipping Fields out for a day two pick and just trying to restart it all, guys, because it's just not really working. You know, I don't think Luke Getsy is necessarily the answer, because a lot of his play calls are, you know, passes behind the line of scrimmage, kind of just not the best timed runs, just altogether. Not a great showing by Chicago offensively. Defensively, you know, they gave up 374 yards to Joe Flacco, but they picked him off three times, once for a pick six. Montez Sweat, guys, has looked great since getting picked up at the trade deadline. He had 2.5 sacks. He's been an instant difference maker. Looks like that payday that he got might be well earned. If he can keep playing like this on this Bears team as they continue to add pieces around him, this might be one of those steals at the trade deadline that the Bears can look back and say, hey, that was actually a pretty good move. But it's not looking too great for Chicago, which, you know, shocker, I guess. No, not trying to be too malicious here, but, you know, it's been like this all season long. We knew the type of team that they were. We know that they have, you know, some optimism on both sides of the ball. They've got some young guys that, you know, they're kind of banking on. And I think defensively, they actually have a pretty strong core of a defense. They held the Browns to 29 yards on 18 attempts. That's 1.6 per clip. So on rushing. So, I mean, obviously rushing wasn't the focus, as Joe Flacco of all people had 374 yards. But I don't know, guys, the Chicago Bears, they're heading in a direction. I don't know if it's the right one. I don't know if it's the wrong one, but they're going somewhere, Ben.
Yeah, and listen, I'm going to say something here about the Browns. I like that the Browns knew that they really couldn't run the football against the Chicago Bears. The Bears have basically moved up into the top three or four teams in the league at stopping the run, and they've stayed there basically all year. So the Browns just went ahead and threw the football, which is the reverse tactic that the Bills used on the Cowboys. They were like, you know what? We can run the football in Dallas, so let's just do it the whole game. And let's not worry about whether or not it's Josh Allen handling the football the whole time. So let's just do it. Let's press an advantage. I mean, that's straight out of the Bill Belichick playbook, is let's not worry about how we win. Let's just worry that we win. And so hats off here to the Browns for doing that with Flacco. I mean, you wouldn't expect that, but there it is. And the hats off to the Bills as well for doing that against the Cowboys. Hey, without jumping on the Justin Fields debate about whether or not Chicago should keep him, because we'll talk about that all offseason, I must say something I have heard repeatedly over the past several months is that if the Bears decide to let him go, that one team that he may end up on is the Atlanta Falcons. And I've got to say, I would love to see it. I don't know how well it would work. It depends on maybe the coach, whether that's Arthur Smith or somebody else. But can you imagine just how fun it would be to watch Justin Fields there in the dome in Atlanta with Drake London and with Kyle Pitts and with Bijan Robinson and with Tyler Allgeier punching people in the gut? I mean, it would just be a lot of fun to watch, right, if nothing else, Simon?
Ben, we can't get my hopes up on the Falcons again. We can't do it yet. I'm going to talk about them later in this episode because everything you're saying is absolutely music to my ears. But until there's a significant change, I just can't allow myself to get too excited. Now, another team that people are talking about for Justin Fields that I'm just going to whisper quietly is if the Pittsburgh Steelers should do something for Justin Fields. And your boy would not be upset about that. Love Justin Fields. You guys both mentioned the Bears defense. I want to highlight that as well, because ever since Montez Sweat came in, it has been a different defense. Matt Eberflus, I alluded to this earlier, second-year head coach, defensive-minded guy. I was talking to Ben earlier in the season off-air. We were talking about Shane Steichen. We were talking about how he rebuilt this Colts offense, even with all the injuries. And I was comparing it to a guy like Matt Eberflus, who, even in year two, through the first like 4 or 5 weeks of the season, it was like he's been trying to rebuild this defense, right? They sold off all the older guys towards the end of the year before Eberflus came in, and he's been trying to build this thing up. They spent all the money in free agency, all the draft picks that they used the first year, and the defense was still bad. Well, the last thing they were missing was a real pass rusher. And Montez Sweat isn't the 15-plus sack a season guy, but he's already doing more than he was doing with the Commanders, right? I heard during the game he's currently leading the Commanders and the Bears in sacks for the season. He would be the first guy to do that to end a season, lead the team. And I don't think anyone's beating him on the Commanders. So that's very interesting. But ever since he came in, this defense has been much, much better. I went through DVOA because on FTN, you could see the DVOA week over week. The Bears defensive ranking by DVOA weeks 1 through 8. So their average weekly ranking was 23rd in weeks 1 through 8 before they got Montez Sweat. And that was with those first five performances of 25th, 27th, 25th, 26th, 26th. So bottom six defense for the first 5 weeks of the season. Then the young DBs start to gel. The linebackers start to gel in the system. Then they get a little bit better, but still pretty mediocre. Then Montez Sweat is in, starting in week 9. And since week 9, their average weekly performance between weeks 9 and 15 is 11th. So they're a borderline top, and that's with that first week of Sweat, they were ranked 24th. So they're a borderline top 10 defense since Montez Sweat has been in the building. And if this is the defense that Eberflus, when he got hired, pitched that he could accomplish, right? And this is with Yannick Ngakoue broke his ankle last week, and I think DeMarcus Walker is the other guy's name who kind of got relegated to rotational duty when Sweat got traded for. He had a good game against the Browns. If they had another pass rusher to this, right, they drafted the defensive tackles in the draft, they paid the linebackers, they've drafted DBs the last 2 years. If they're going to be a top 10 defense, you know, depending on whatever they do with the offense, right? You know, Ronan mentioned Luke Getsy. There was a Adam Schefter tweet that they're already planning on moving on from Getsy in the offseason, which is a hilarious tweet to get week 15, you know, where you're not even going to fire the guy, but you're like, yeah, by the way, he's not going to stick around, even though we're still technically in the wild card hunt. It's pretty funny. But depending on what happens with the offense, if Eberflus really put together a top 10 defense, like he might be able to stick around. That wasn't what I was saying, you know, 5-6 weeks ago for this guy. So shout out to him and shout out to this defense for really coming together the second half of the season, Ben.
Yeah, I agree with you about the defense, especially noticeably since Montez Sweat, because there were already pieces in place. We saw it in the offseason. We kind of know first 5, 6, 7, 8 weeks of the season, it's not going to look the same when you have so many new pieces. But the Montez Sweat addition really seemed to be good. And I'm okay if they keep Eberflus. I'm okay if they let him go. I kind of think I'm leaning personally toward letting him go. I just don't like the way the offense has been handled. I really, really don't. I don't like the way Justin Fields has been handled. But you're right. If the defense is going to be this good next year, and if they can start to figure out things on the offense, no matter what they do with Fields, if they can figure out something on offense, then I'm okay if they keep Eberflus and give him another year, because I like to see the guys get 3 years, right? So I kind of want to see if he can finish out this season strong. The schedule's not too bad with the Cardinals, Falcons, and Packers. Those are all winnable games if you have a decent team, and the Bears look like they have a decent team. So, you know, if they can win 2 out of those 3, give me some hope for next year, then I'm more interested. So just like you basically said, Simon, over the past few weeks here, feel different about the Bears than I would have a few weeks ago. I'm going to go back to my Falcons fantasy real quick, y'all. I can't help it. Can you imagine if they traded for Justin Fields and then got aggressive and got Ben Johnson from Detroit to come and coach their team, the current flavor of the month, right? The master of all these kind of little tools and trades and stuff like that. I would enjoy it so much. So anyway, that's it. Fantasy over. Back to real life. All right. I think we've so that's the Browns and the Bears. I think we've covered enough on that. The Browns come out with a victory and the Bears keep on fighting. Let's do the barbecue and then we'll have our one last thing around the NFL. I've got several different things. I think we're gonna hit 4 of them this week and we'll save the others for maybe next week. Biggest loss of the weekend. There's many different directions you could go with that. I think there's one that looks really obvious, but that's not in the direction I'm going to go. So I'm interested to see how you guys do it. Ronan, you're first.
I'm going to go with the obvious one, Ben. The Chargers, right? They got blown out on Thursday Night Football. Their head coach gets fired. Their GM gets fired. Everything's on fire there in the in Los Angeles there for the Chargers. Clear cut, biggest loss of the week for me, Ben.
All right, Simon.
For me, I'm going with the Pittsburgh Steelers. I try to not be a homer on this podcast, positive or negative, but I think when you look at losing to a team in the conference and the Colts, who are also in the wild card hunt, right? It was between the Steelers and the Broncos for me, taking losses when teams like the Texans won this week, despite missing their entire offense. The Browns win, the Bengals win. The AFC wildcard hunt is getting really, really, or remaining really, really tight at this part of the season. But the Steelers to lose to another team in that wild card hunt in the Colts and lose in really just bad fashion. And Mason Rudolph is starting next week. You talk about down bad. That's where we're at. Steelers Twitter update for everybody. Real down bad. I mean, it's become just like maligned, just like numbness over there. It's a real, real tough scene. Yeah. So 3 straight losses for the Steelers, including this really important matchup to the Colts. So I'm going with the Steelers.
Yeah, I like both of what you guys are saying, especially because the Chargers had an awful loss, plus everything coming into that game. Same thing for the Steelers. I mean, 3 games which really they should have won, and instead they've lost all 3 of those games. So brutal. I'm going to go with the Green Bay Packers. This was a team that 2 weeks ago was 6-6. They had the basically had the Giants beat on Monday Night Football. Tough game notwithstanding. They lose that one. And then on Sunday, this is a game they got to watch firsthand. The defense gives up 34 points. Baker Mayfield goes off for 381 yards, 4 touchdowns. I mean, it was the Packers' offense wasn't bad. It was kind of close to what it's basically been, give or take, this year. But the defense just gave it all up at home, too. So a tough loss there for the Packers. They're now 6-8. They're the 11 seed right now in the NFC. They can scratch their way back in, but it's not going to be easy because everybody in front of them has 7 wins, except for the Falcons, basically. So they're going to have to scratch and claw their way back in. They can, but still maybe two games that you would love to have back. You would love to see the Packers be 8-6 right now. So tough loss for them as well. All right, that's the first barbecue question. Next, penalty flags. We've each got you can throw as many as you want. If you've got 10 you want to throw, by all means, you can throw a penalty flag at anybody, anywhere. That's all related to the NFL. Simon, I'll let you go throw the first one.
So I'm doing this on something that's league-wide and pretty general. I'm throwing a penalty flag on pick plays. I hate them. I've never understood why they're allowed, especially because as the years have gone on, it's become more and more clear as we have more people like diagnosing film and putting out clips on Twitter and broadcasters are getting smarter about like pointing things like this out, that there are just routes that are clearly designed just to run into the defender, to the point that this week I saw 3 times that they weren't even continuing to run the route anymore. They were literally just running into the person and stopping and not looking back at the quarterback. And that's when, at least even as recently as earlier this year, refs were calling the penalty. They were calling it offensive pass interference because, you know, hey, you at least need to make it look like you're running a route. We know you're not running a route, but you at least have to make it look like it for TV purposes. And 3 times this week, I saw the receiver run into the defender, just stop and not look at the quarterback. So I'm throwing the penalty flag on pick plays. It's so hard as a defender to do anything anymore. Allowing the offense to just run into you in whether it's goal line situations or first down, whatever. I don't like it. You know, they're talking about the tush push and trying to get that out of the game. Like, let's take out pick plays. I don't like any of them. Or make it a more, maybe not an offensive pass interference penalty, but can we get a new kind of penalty, a literal penalty flag, where it's just like 5 yards or something? Because I don't like these.
Yeah, I agree. I don't like them either, but it's become, we talked before with some of the concussions that we talked about, things settle in, man, and it's almost like they just kind of quit calling them. They just give it up, and watch. Come playoff time, somebody's going to get called for one. And everybody's going to be like, why didn't you call this during the regular season? And you waited till a big moment in the playoffs for somebody to call one.
Yep.
And, you know, we're all going to be ticked off, and it will be the cherry on top of all the criticisms of the referees this year. Ronan, what you got?
Yeah, I'm going to be throwing my penalty flag on Christian McCaffrey because I'm in my fantasy playoffs, and he decided to go off. And I just know come next week, I'm going to lose. My first seed bye is going to be all for naught. And, Christian McCaffrey, he had 115 yards rushing, 1 touchdown, and then 72 yards receiving and 2 touchdowns. Just obviously went off. probably put up a 50 burger for most of you in your leagues. I'm sorry if you had to go against him in fantasy, but I wish I could have, you know, reaped the benefits of that, because once again, Christian McCaffrey is rolling, and even Brock Purdy is hitting the podium and saying he's the MVP. He's the MVP. He's the MVP of this team. He's the MVP of this league. And he's the MVP of my fantasy team, Ben.
Yeah, absolutely. Fair.
Ronan just wanted to get on here and tell us that he had a first round bye in fantasy this year. Whatever.
The other fantasy league.
There's Ben's with Justin Fields and Ben Johnson on the Falcons. And then there's Ronan's where he's first in.
Let's show some love to CMC. He's an MVP candidate as a running back still. But, you know, no 49ers talk today. It kills me. Trust me, it kills me. Show so much love to the 49ers. But you know what? CMC, he's making a case for MVP still.
I hear you, man. All right. I promised everybody I was going to throw a flag at one team and then pick it up and instead throw it at the other team. So here it comes. My first impulse was to throw a penalty flag at the Raiders. Specifically, they're up 42-0, and they're running trick plays on the Chargers in the second half with a 42-0 lead. That's why? You know, what's the point of that? There's no place for that in football. And then I got to thinking, you know what? It's the Raiders. This is exactly what the Raiders should be doing. Of all franchises in any North American sports anywhere, this is exactly what the Raiders should be doing. They should be doing everything possible to be as roguish and as piratish and as mean as possible. And they need to get back and do more of that. So I encourage that. You know, how often do you get a 42-0 lead to even do this in the first place? But this is exactly what Pierce and the Raiders and the entire Raiders franchise needs to be doing. And instead, the Chargers should be able to stop some of this crap. You shouldn't be down 42-0. So I'm throwing a flag on the Chargers for being down 42-0 and not being able to stop trick plays in the first drive of the second half. All right. So that's my flag that I'm picking up from the Raiders and throw it at the Chargers instead. All right. That's our penalty. Anybody got more penalty flags they want to throw this week?
No, just shout out Antonio Pierce, man. Give him the job. That I saw that halftime quote. I don't think it was from one of those fake accounts, but where it was like, what are you going to do at halftime? Now that, what was it? Was it the 42-0 at the half, whatever it was? And it was just like, you're pushing the pedal to the metal. And I was just like, oh, yeah, baby. You keep it going, man. You go get that job, AP. Go get that job. I love it.
Yeah, I totally agree. Keep it up. So, all right. Next part of our barbecue, Ben's burning questions. How many coaches should be fired? No, listen, we all know the possibilities. We're not going to rattle off all the teams that might fire somebody. But how many coaches left would you actually fire at the end of the season, or today if you care to? But by the end of the season, how many coaches would you actually like to see fired? Ronan, you first.
I feel like I'm forgetting one, but I'm going to go 4. Do you want me to list them?
Yes.
Okay. And I know – Simon's not – I feel like Simon's not going to love that I'm not including someone on here. But I've got Ron Rivera over in Washington. I've got Arthur Smith in Atlanta, Dennis Allen in New Orleans, and then I've got Eberflus in Chicago. I think with, you know, hopefully it seems like the number one pick coming up here. Go ahead and take your quarterback, get that rookie deal, get the new coach, and you know, try to move on. Simon, what are your coaches who should be fired?
Who do you think I am missing from your list?
Okay.
Who was the person that you said you thought I'd be upset that wasn't on?
I think that I don't have someone that you think. That's what I meant. Sorry. Because I know there's one guy that we don't necessarily see eye to eye on.
I only have two names on my list, and they're both on yours, and it's Arthur Smith and it's Ron Rivera. Like I said earlier, Matt Eberflus, I'm okay. You know, if the main goal this year in year two was you better make that defense what you told me your defense was going to be, and it got to basically a top 10 defense with Montez Sweat. Hey man, good on you. Good job. You did it. I'm okay with that. Again, like Ben kind of said when he presented this question, like there are guys that you can make the cases for, and teams will probably go in other directions. Dennis Allen, at this point in the season, is TBD for me. I mean, he probably should, But at this point, I'm not like Dennis Allen needs to go, right? They get the big win when they needed it. We'll see how the season finishes out. But Arthur Smith's got to go. I mean, 7 points against the Panthers is kind of the nail in the coffin when you've got the offensive weapons that you've got. Sounds like he might go back to Taylor Heinicke. Just like coaches changing facial hair, which he has done this season, midseason. If you toggle back and forth between the quarterbacks multiple times, I don't like that. Oh, is that the guy that you thought I was going to be mad about? Robert Saleh, as I said, the facial hair thing I remembered. yeah, I'm not as passionate about that anymore, but he probably should go too. But yeah, and Rivera is just done. That's the easy one. But Rivera and Smith are the ones that I'm like, these guys should definitely be on out of here. I think with Saleh too, it's like, you do have the built-in excuse of you've got Aaron Rodgers, and Aaron Rodgers came to be here, so you're probably not going to do that anyways. And the defense is still great, and that's why he's here. So I'm giving, in the way this question is worded, I'm giving the coaches credit for the things that are probably like the number one and number two thing on their goal sheet for the year. And Saleh's goalposts changed when Rodgers got hurt for the season, I think, even if I don't like the way he's handled some of the quarterback stuff. But Rivera and Smith are my two guys, Ben.
Yeah, so my list looks like Ronan plus two, but I'm not adding anybody new, really. So it's those four. I think Belichick is gone, and I think that's the one that seems to be out there as well, that's probably going to happen. No guarantees, but that does seem out there. And then Robert Saleh, you already mentioned as well. So no huge surprises there. Now, honestly, I do like to give a coach 3 years, unless there's some obvious huge reason that he is just really stinking it up and just has to go. I like to give a coach 3 years if you can. If you hire somebody, I like to give them a chance. So Saleh, Allen, Eberflus, I'm okay if they get their third years. But as far as me feeling good about them, I just don't. I don't feel good about them getting it done next year versus this year. And in some cases, it's just even if I knew that they might have a decent year next year, I just don't like their style. I don't really like the way that they do things. It's just not my kind of way. So there's kind of a double whammy there. It's not only do the records not look good, but I just don't really like the way they do things. So, you know, double whammy there.
I think the thing I'd be nervous about, if I actually had to pull the trigger on Saleh, I shouldn't have said that. That sounds really bad. If I actually had to fire Robert Saleh, is I would hate to do that, because I think the way he's handled the quarterback situation is a fireable offense. But what I would hate to have happen next year is you walk in and Aaron Rodgers is healthy and you have basically the team you were supposed to have this year, but you have a new head coach and a new coaching staff, and then the defense falls off, right? If you walk into next year and you're supposed to have this Super Bowl window and Rodgers is supposed to be there and this offense is supposed to get to above average and you have an elite defense and you're supposed to go compete for a Super Bowl, but I was the guy that fired Saleh and now this defense is average or mediocre, I'd be like, okay, that was the wrong move. I think that's why I feel that way on him now, as opposed to where I was, you know, a month or two ago. For Belichick, what I want to know from you guys is, do you think, let's say you're in charge of this, right? You're Kraft, and you're like, I have to make this decision on Belichick. Could you walk in and say, hey, I still want you to be the head coach, but I'm going to hire someone to be the GM, and they're going to go 50-50 with you on the rest of the staff? I'm basically going to take your GMing and your control of the staff away because we need to fix this offense, and then you let him make the decision? Or is it just, hey, man, this thing has been real bad since Brady has left. You haven't put a good coaching staff together. You haven't put a good offense together. Like, it's done. Or do you almost like give a chance of, I'd like you to still be the head coach, but we need to do something to change this offense, and here's what I'm doing. What do you think, Ben?
Yeah, I would be open to that if Belichick would be, and that's a question too. Would he even be open to that? But I would be open to that. Now, my concerns go along with that. Well, even if I do technically split up these job duties again, I mean, Belichick's an institution, man. I mean, isn't still everybody in the building kind of going to go to him? So yeah. I don't know how well that would work. Might be a little awkward, but I'd be open to it because, I mean, the guy's won so many Super Bowls. I hate to just run him out of town. On the other hand, ever since Brady left, it's gone downhill basically every year, and in some cases, almost absurdly so. So I need to do something. I wish Belichick would just decide to go on his own, but I don't think that's going to happen. So I would be open to, hey, another year or two of, hey, let's bring in some new blood on the GM side. Ronan?
I think in a perfect world, if I were Robert Kraft, I would try and promote Bill Belichick to be that GM, actually. And then I'd fight like heck to bring Mike Vrabel over as head coach, see if Tennessee would let go of him for some sort of draft capital, or yeah, probably just draft capital, and kind of go from there, because that's a guy that you know Belichick will work with. You know he's got a repertoire with him. And they're like-minded, but they also are different enough to be able to collaborate on things. So, I mean, that's what I would do in a perfect world. As far as what to do with Belichick, yeah, you'd probably like to, I don't know. I feel like the grass is always greener on the other side, because, you know, you grab one of these, you know, even average head coaches and give them the Patriots roster, and it probably looks a lot different. Defensively, they've got talent, but I don't think they're going to be in the same spots. I don't think they're going to be flying around. I don't think that secondary is going to be as relatively stout. I don't have the numbers pulled up, but, you know, it's a Patriots defense. They're not going to be a pushover. And that's because of Bill Belichick. So, you know, even if that's, I don't know, in some screwed up world, can someone be a GM and a defensive coordinator? Is that possible? Because, like, well, I mean, I guess Belichick's already been doing it, right? I mean, just without the DC label.
Also the head coach, yeah.
Yeah, like, I don't know. I think you could go a number of different ways, but I think ultimately you need to bring someone new in. I don't think that necessarily means that Belichick has to leave, but I think bringing someone in, you know, maybe offensive minded, just to help things out a little bit, even things out, I think would be beneficial, Ben.
Well, hey, real quick, don't worry, because they're just going to promote the internal Gerard Mayo, who was on this team for, you know, what, 8 years, and has been coaching with this team under Belichick for 5 years. Don't worry, he's just going to get promoted. So I'm sure a lot will change. And listen, there's always, remember, you know, they had that offensive coordinator last year, and I heard he just got promoted to defensive play caller with a different team. So that obviously worked out really well, and I'm sure is a real gold sticker on Belichick's resume. No, you don't think so? Okay, never mind. So goofy. I still can't believe it.
We've hit so many different things this podcast. I love it. Real quick on Robert Saleh again, because I think you're right. You mentioned it. I don't think he's going anywhere, because I think Aaron Rodgers doesn't want him to.
Yeah.
And I think most of us expect Aaron Rodgers gets one more season, kind of call things his way, because everybody wants to see what he can do. And if Aaron Rodgers wants Saleh back, then I do think Saleh's coming back. But again, that's in a vacuum, and nobody lives in a vacuum. So we'll see how it works out. All right. We'll be talking about more about the coaches, I'm sure, in the weeks ahead. So final barbecue question of the week before we do our one final NFL thing of the week. Which of the six teams, by the way, I'm going to look it up real quick and see if it's just six teams now. It may have moved to seven teams.
I looked.
Okay, so it's still six teams that have been eliminated from the playoffs. Those six teams are the Panthers, the Patriots, the Cardinals, the Commanders, the Jets, and the Titans. But of those six, which one would you pick to get back in the playoffs next year? So right away, turnaround. Ronan, you're first.
I hate to take the easy answer, but I feel like it's the Jets. You know, Aaron Rodgers coming back, stout defense. Hopefully you see Breece Hall come back. Garrett Wilson's hopefully going to take a big step forward from this year, with Rodgers coming back looking hopefully the same or relatively close to the same that he has in years past. But yeah, I feel like the Jets, there's just a lot of uncertainty for these teams. Simon?
Yeah, it is the Jets. all you're banking on is can Aaron Rodgers be healthy, and it shouldn't really be an issue. If I was worried about that, this would be a much harder question, and I am worried about it, but I'm just also going to take the easy road and not try and think of who would be past the Jets. So Jets, Ben, we're 2-0 on the Jets here. What do you say?
Well, I'll third it, and then I'll toss in my other thought. My thought on the Jets is, though, one reason that I and some people didn't want to get Aaron Rodgers in the offseason was because of the age. And I don't know how much age factored into the injury. I don't, you know, don't have an algorithm for that. But still, we all know age plus bad Jets offensive line. Who's to say you get halfway through next season and you don't have some kind of an Aaron Rodgers hiccup again health-wise, which would be devastating. But that is part of the appeal of having Lamar Jackson, who's younger, versus an Aaron Rodgers, who's quite a bit older. One of the things to think about. After the Jets, I think I would go ahead and pick either the Cardinals or the Titans. So the Titans, you got Mike Vrabel. If he stays, I know we've heard lots of rumors about him going to the Patriots. I don't think that's going to happen. I think he stays in Tennessee. And, I mean, he fought hard to be there. So I don't think he wants to go, having fought so hard. Mm-hmm. And listen, the Titans have played a lot of close games this year. If some of those games tilted the other direction, they could actually be in the playoffs this year, theoretically. Now, they really weren't good enough to get those games to tilt. But you look at the Titans, if they can add another wide receiver next year, another offensive lineman, there's really no reason why they can't compete for a playoff spot next year. And then the Cardinals, I think, if depending on what happens, if Kyler Murray's back in the helm, Kyler Murray's focused and healthy, there's no reason they can't compete for a playoff spot next year. I mean, if Gannon's got his act together, which they're competing under Gannon, they're not winning, but they're competing. So, you know, Cardinals would be my other team behind the Jets. All right, Roland, final thing around the NFL.
Yeah, the Detroit Lions eviscerated the Broncos on Saturday. Their offense went ballistic, 448 total yards. Jared Goff had 5 passing touchdowns for 278 yards, 24 completions on 34 attempts. And then Jahmyr Gibbs, 11 attempts, 100 yards rushing. David Montgomery, 17 attempts, 85 yards rushing, the total 28 attempts, 185 yards rushing, and a touchdown. Just Detroit offense rolling right now. Simon, what is your last thing from the week?
Last thing from the week is the conversation around Josh Dobbs being relegated to not only backup status for the Vikings, but QB3. I think we've seen that more this year than we typically have. And to me, it makes some sense. I just wanted to kind of get my thoughts on that out. And it's almost like it's ripping the Band-Aid off, and it's having some conviction in the decision, right? If this guy isn't good enough for me to say you're the starter tomorrow, then I don't want you to be one snap away from being in the game too, right? So it's not necessarily that, and that even that sounded harsh as I was explaining it, but it's not necessarily just the you're now, your Madden rating is now, it was above these other two guys 1 week, and the next week, oh wait, it's actually less than that, right? Sort of thing, to put in super plain terms. But it's, listen, this offense isn't working right now, right? And it's not going, it wouldn't be any different. It wouldn't really be a fix if I made you one snap away from being back in the game. So you're going to go from 1 to 3 this week. We'll see how long that lasts. But based on the game plan that we need to put in, based on the way we need to operate, we need the starter and the backup to be in lockstep. So you're going to go down to 3. We saw this with Dobbs. We saw it with Zach Wilson, right? When he got benched, and there was one other instance, maybe somewhere in Cleveland, one of those times. But I think it's a pretty normal thing. I don't think it means all of a sudden Dobbs sucks. I don't think it means that he was never that good. I think that's still a guy that should be a real legitimate backup in the NFL for a few more years. But yeah, that was just kind of an interesting thing as the week went on, Ben.
My final thing around the NFL this week, I am going to fast forward 4 or 5 months and revisit Atlanta Falcons Fantasy Island once again. They've got Ben Johnson as their coach. They've traded for Justin Fields, and they still have managed to have their first-round draft pick. And with it, they're going to pick somebody on the defense. So either Kool-Aid McKinstry, the cornerback from Alabama, or Jared Verse, the hot, hot edge rusher from Florida State. And so the defense keeps getting better too, and I start rooting for them again. Simon, I'm done.
Ben's just giving me the sweetest dreams as I drift off to bed tonight. This is great. Thank you all so much for listening to another episode of the Stat Sheet Podcast. Quick programming note, we will have an episode next week. We haven't fully ironed out all the details of that, but we will have an episode this week. But happy holidays to all that have a holiday coming up in the next week or so. We will have something for you, though, next week. Make sure you are subscribed to the pod to get that update. It should still be out on Tuesday, though. Make sure you are following at StatSheetPod on Twitter. Make sure you're following all the podcasts on Box Score Network and following Box Score Network at B Score Network. We appreciate it. Everybody have a great holiday filled with football, and we'll talk to you next week. Have a good one.